Hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Wall Street Journal, from the Raleigh News and Observer Business section, and perhaps we'll have some readings from Reuters, Bloomberg, and the Triangle Business Journal. Well, the stocks tumble amid tech sector sell-off. Investors worry about the company's ability to protect users' data, and Facebook slides 6.8%. Tech shares drag down stock indices, jolting investors who have rallied behind a handful of the hot tech companies and raising fresh questions about the resiliency of a nine-year bull market in U.S. stocks. Together, Facebook, Amazon.com, Netflix, and Google parent Alphabet, young firms closely associated with the Silicon Valley tech scene and deemed to be disruptors of rival firms engaged in media, travel, online shipping, and other businesses, well, they shed a total of roughly $76 billion in market value from the Dow stocks. The average dropped 335.60 or 1.3% to close at 2460.91. That was as of Tuesday the 20th. Facebook shares posted the largest percentage decline in nearly 4 years, dropping 6.8% to $172 and wiping out $36 billion in market value following news that a firm tied to President Trump's election campaign gathered data from millions of Facebook profiles without authorization. The Facebook news raised concerns about, among analysts and investors about the company's capacity to handle customer data in a way that will enable them to continue to make money while protecting users' privacy. The savior of the market all of a sudden becomes a problem, said Mike Bailey, director of research at $1 billion wealth management FBB Capital Partners. He goes on to say investors were waiting for some kind of trigger. Well, mill towns welcome the tariffs, even if their effect is unclear. In the heart of America's diminished steel country, support for President Trump's tariffs on imports is broad and bipartisan. It is tempered, though, by a strong streak of realism. Trump's tariffs are expected to raise U.S. prices for steel and aluminum, and that would help domestic producers and create several hundred new steel worker jobs. But the tariffs aren't going to return American steel anywhere close to its peak output in the 70s. Even some steel workers feel it in places like Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles southwest of Pittsburgh. People in Canonsburg are proud of that past. A statue of singer and native son Perry Como adorns the town. The borough claims to have the second largest July 4th celebration in the state, behind only Philadelphia. And coal and steel once dominated the landscape, but many of the mills have closed in recent decades. The White House is preparing to crack down on what it says are improper Chinese trade practices by making it significantly more difficult for Chinese firms to acquire advanced U.S. technology or invest in American companies, individuals involved in the planning said. The administration plans to release on Thursday a package of proposed punitive measures aimed at China that include tariffs on imports worth at least $30 billion. But the tariffs won't be imposed immediately. Rather, U.S. industry will be given an opportunity to comment on which products should be subject to the duties. As part of the package, the White House will announce possible investment restrictions by Chinese firms in the United States and will direct the U.S. Treasury Department to outline rules of governing investment from China. Well, back home, a prominent North Carolina banker is battling the IRS after being ensnared in a Ponzi scheme. Former top executive of Charlotte-based North Carolina National Bank, now Bank of America, is suing the IRS for more than $200,000 in refunds After claiming he was fleeced by an international Ponzi scheme, Luther Hodges Jr., who once was chairman of the board of bank at the Bank of America predecessor NCNB, filed his suit this month against the IRS in federal court in Charlotte. In his case, Hodges is seeking penalties he claims the IRS erroneously charged him for not reporting investments Hodges says were never made in the first place in the scheme masterminded by financier Alan Stanford. Well, locally, Peace University is selling part of the Seaboard Station property. Harris Teeter is still planned. William Peace University announced on Tuesday that it is selling a portion of the neighboring Seaboard Station property for commercial and real estate development, which will still include a full-size Harris Teeter supermarket. The announcement kicks off a marketing campaign to sell the property to a buyer who can produce the kind of project that fits in with the rapidly developing area north of downtown. The university considers this process to be about selection of the best bid, not the highest bid, so said Billy Redman, president and CEO of Trademark Properties, and Marcus Jackson, who's the managing director of Urban Investments. They made in a joint statement, they are representing the university in the sale. University remains invested and committed to the tenants, neighbors, and community, and will carefully evaluate all the offers to ensure the right fit is selected for the future of Seaboard. Still locally, the Five Points residents on Monday aired a number of reasons, from safety and traffic to stormwater runoff and historical integrity, as to why they oppose Hayes Barton Baptist Church's plan to tear down six historic homes to add a church parking lot. Yet what bubbled up during the nearly two-hour session among the more than 200 residents, church supporters, and community members were not only specific concerns, but also issues of fairness and sacrifice. This has been pretty intense, said church pastor David Haley. He says, we need to regroup and cool down and give some thought to what has been said. The church, tucked into the corner of Whitaker Mill Road and Glenwood Avenue, has wanted to add parking for a long time to make it easier to drop off children at church preschool and to help less mobile church members to reach the sanctuary. During a long-range capital planning process, the church looked at demolishing six houses it owns along White Oak Road to add more than 70 parking spaces. Five of those homes have been rented out by the church, some for decades. The sixth was purchased just this month. All of the homes, except for the one right behind the church, are considered contributing structures to the Bloomsbury Historic District, which was entered on the National Registry of Historic Places in 2002. Haley outlined this history along with Mary Beth Johnson and talked about the church's contributions to the greater community during a 20-minute presentation. They came, both Haley and Johnson said, to listen, understand, and better learn about the concerns of the neighborhood. Their church presentation was followed by Jennifer Williams and Adam Mitchell representing Save Six, a group of neighbors who have rallied behind the local neighborhood group. Well, Raleigh leaders resist staff effort to raise the water rates. Residents have seen increases in water and sewer rates for nearly a decade, and now some Raleigh leaders aren't ready to sign off on another hike. City staff are recommending a 3% increase in the water and sewer rate for the coming fiscal year, which begins July 1. That would cost the average residential customer an additional $1.68 a month, bringing the monthly utility bill from $56 to $57. The water and sewer rates are set during the city's annual budgeting process. City Manager Ruffin Hall will present his recommended budget in May, and the City Council is expected to approve it by June 30. If the Council decides against increasing these rates, the Utilities Department will likely have to defer or eliminate planned infrastructure and capital projects. Those improvements aren't wish list items, said Robert Massengill, who is Raleigh's public utilities director. He goes on to say, addressing our asset management needs, primarily our aging pipes, is a costly, long-term initiative to avoid failures in our water and sewer system. We are proposing to make minor annual rate adjustments along the way rather than be faced with double-digit increases in the future, which will become necessary over time if we ignore the system. Well, rising yields and the dollar put fresh dent in gold. Gold prices slid as the dollar and treasury yields rose before the Federal Reserve's latest interest rate decision and outlook for the year. Front month gold for the March delivery shed 0.4% to $1,311.10 a troy ounce on the COMEX division of the New York Mercantile Exchange Tuesday, its fourth decline in the past five sessions. Prices have stayed between $1,305 and $1,360 this year, moving within that range based on swings in the dollar and investors' focus on higher interest rates. A stronger dollar makes gold and other commodities denominated in U.S. currency more expensive for overseas buyers, while higher interest rates tend to boost treasury yields, making raw materials less attractive. U.S. government bond prices fell Tuesday as investors looked forward to the conclusion of the Fed's meeting on Wednesday and cleared space in their portfolios for the new bonds from Anheuser-Busch InBev S.A. The yield on the 10-year Treasury settled at 2.88 compared with 2.844 Monday. Yields, which rise when bond prices fall, have been trending higher in recent days following a typical pattern in the lead-up to a Fed meeting. Fed officials are widely expected to lift short-term rates this week, and some analysts believe they could also raise a number of projected future increases. This particular piece I've just read was prior to the Fed meeting, and they have, as I recall, raised that rate to 0.25, or a quarter of a percent. Well, lending stays calm despite the alarm bell in short-term lending markets. A key measure of distress is at its highest level since the Eurozone debt crisis, but there's no sign of panic. Until recently, turmoil in those markets signaled that banks had stopped trusting each other, clogging much-needed funding for investors and leading to sell-offs. It happened after the Lehman Brothers collapse a decade ago and in 2012 after Greece teetered on the brink of insolvency. This time, there is a more benign reason, analysts and investors say. The U.S. Treasury is issuing more short-term bills. That and the Federal Reserve selling some of its bonds it bought through quantitative easing means the global dollar market may simply be readapting after a period of unprecedented central bank influence. Well, again, locally, those of you who have been to the P.F. Chang restaurant, Crabtree, very nice. But the signature chicken lettuce wraps offered by Chang might taste great to legions of diners, but they aren't doing much to help the company's credit rating. On Monday, S&P Global Ratings downgraded Chang's China Bistro, the operator of the venerable Chinese restaurant chain, by one notch to CCC+, close to the bottom of its rating scale, meaning the company's debt is currently vulnerable to non-payment. Chang's hit upon hard times when the economy soured in 07 and went private in 12. The hope at the time was that the company could best execute a turnaround outside of the public eye, but that has proved to be challenging, with S&P now saying there's a growing uncertainty about its ability to refinance a $300 million bond due in 2020. I mentioned a 0.25% increase in the Fed. That was, I believe, Tuesday. The journal, as of this morning, Thursday the 22nd, says that the U.S. Central Bank does lift the benchmark rate and expects at least two more moves this year. The Federal Reserve officials signaled Wednesday that they could pick up the pace of interest rate increases to cool economic growth after next year. The Fed voted unanimously to raise its benchmark federal funds rate by 0.25 percentage point, which is what I alluded to a few minutes ago, to a range between 1.5 and 1.75. Officials said they expected to lift it another two or three times this year, in two or three more times in 2018. New forecasts show officials project faster economic growth, higher inflation, and lower employment in coming years. They indicated they expect they will need to tap on the monetary brakes, raising rates in 2020 to a level that would mark the first time in more than a decade that interest rate policy was deliberately restrictive. New Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, in his first news conference as the bank's chief, said officials want to balance two risks. One, that they raise rates too much, causing inflation to stay below their 2% target and damaging the Fed's credibility. The other is that they raise rates too slowly, letting the economy overheat and forcing them to move more quickly, triggering a recession. Well, U.S. and China sharpen the trade sores as the Trump administration pursues talks with allies on exemptions from the U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum. China risks escalating trade tensions with the U.S. by targeting U.S. agricultural exports from farm belt states. Chinese officials facing punitive U.S. trade policies that are set to be announced Thursday are preparing to respond with their own tariffs focused on U.S. exports of soybeans, sorghum, and live hogs, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The United States is among the top suppliers of these products to China. Amazon faces a new probe in Japan. Antitrust regulators examine practices of online retailer for a second time. The Amazon.com's Japanese unit has come under antitrust scrutiny for the second time in as many years as retailers become more dependent on the e-commerce giant for customer traffic. Officials from the Fair Trade Commission, that is Japan's antitrust watchdog, have visited the headquarters of Amazon Japan as they investigate possible violations of the Anti-Monopoly Act, a government official said Thursday. Amazon, which generated nearly 7% of its global sales in Japan last year, is fully cooperating with the commission, an Amazon Japan spokesman said, without elaborating. Well, we've all heard it. Toy makers are rattled by loss of Toys R Us. The liquidation of Toys R Us has sent the toy industry reeling, leaving Mattel and Hasbro and other manufacturers without a large claim devoted to selling games and dolls and forcing them to scramble to secure other outlets to carry their items. Toys R Us, which had more than $11 billion in revenue in the latest fiscal year, is one of the retail chains that were once seen by vendors as category killers and have emerged as crucial checks on the power of Amazon.com stores like Best Buy Company and Barnes & Noble provide electronics manufacturers and book publishers with vast networks of physical showrooms. The likely death of Toys, which early Thursday filed plans to liquidate its U.S. operations and other businesses, means the $27 billion U.S. toy industry will no longer have a national partner to showcase its wares year-round, test products, and find the next Shopkins or Zuzu pet. Well, the Puerto Rico bonds bounce back. Brighter economic outlook, prospects for bankruptcy pact lift value of the island's debt. Debt from Puerto Rico is a top-performing bond investment of 18, reflecting an unexpected improvement in the island's economy and budding hopes for a settlement with creditors to resolve its bankruptcy of Puerto Rico municipal bonds. Let me reread that, if you'll permit me. Most U.S. bonds have lost value this year because of rising interest rates, but an index of Puerto Rico municipal bonds has returned 13.8%, making it the top performer out of 323 bond indices that are maintained by the S&P Dow Jones indices. Some Puerto Rico bonds have more than doubled in price since the end of December. The rally began in January when Puerto Rico's government disclosed economic data showing previous estimates of the financial impact of Hurricane Maria were overly pessimistic. More recently, investors have been buying bonds in anticipation of substantive talks with bondholders to reach a consensual restructuring bondholders and people involved in the negotiations said. Well, Sears reports another dismal quarter. Sears Holdings Corporation announced $540 million in new loan agreements and reported another dismal quarter in which sales fell by nearly a third as the struggling retailer continued to close stores. Total store sales fell to $4.4 billion in the three-month period ending February 3rd from $6.1 billion a year earlier. Excluding the closures, sales fell 18% at existing Sears stores and 12% at Kmart locations for the three-month period ending February 3rd. The company's results contrast with those of other retailers, including Macy's, Kohl's, and Nordstrom, all of which reported higher sales for their year-end periods as consumer spending picked up over the holiday season. Well, the Senate passes a bill easing the banking rules. Congress moved a step closer Wednesday to releasing the wave of crisis-era restrictions placed on the banking industry. With the Senate approval of a bipartisan plan to ease rules for small and mid-sized banks, the bill, which has a good chance of becoming law, would be the most significant revamp of financial rules since President Donald Trump took office and his administration set out broad goals to reduce business regulations. Approved on a 67-31 vote, the legislation seeks to cut red tape and relieve lenders from some of the most onerous rules put in place after the financial crisis, and that includes restrictions meant to limit the damage firms could cause to the economy. 17 centrists from the Democratic caucus supported the bill, bucking the party's liberals who have fought changes to the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial law, a sweeping initiative meant to prevent another financial meltdown. Supporters said the bill will spur more lending and boost the U.S. economy. The bill has received widespread support for one good reason, that is, the cycle of lending and job creation has been stifled by onerous regulation, said Senator Mike Crapo, Republican of Idaho. He's the bill's main author and chairman of the banking committee on the floor ahead of the vote. Under the What's News column, front page business and finance of the Wall Street Journal, I read that about the Puerto Rico bonds. Tesla is entering a critical period in which it must boost Model 3 production or possibly face severe financial consequences. A federal tax ruling dealt a new blow to a group of pipeline firms that had helped finance a build-out of energy infrastructure. Nike said it had received complaints about workplace behavior and that its number two executive has resigned. Then over in the U.K., U.S. bank Coutts, a pillar of the British establishment, investigated sexual harassment of women at that firm. And over here, Steve Wynn may seek to sell his Wynn Resort shares, potentially setting off a scramble to control the firm. And Carl Icahn is preparing a significant tightening of its privacy standards in response to new European Union policies. And CN's service problems are causing severe delays in deliveries of grain, crude oil, and other goods. I believe I read the article on Toys R Us. The Amazon unit, Japan's unit, is being probed by antitrust regulators. I think we covered that. Hart Media filed for Chapter 11 after reaching an accord with bondholders. The Trump administration slapped Russia with its first sanctions for election campaign meddling and waging cyber attacks. Bob Mueller subpoenaed the Trump Organization for documents relating to his probe into Russia's election meddling. And continuing what's news, the little tidbits on the front page. We read that about the Fed increasing the federal funds rate by a quarter. A video of the fatal accident, including a Uber self-driving car, appears to show the vehicle heading straight into the pedestrian. General Mills will raise prices on some meals and snacks to reflect higher ingredient and shipping costs. Median pay for CEOs of 133 of the largest U.S. companies reached an all-time high of $11.6 million in 2017. The European Union unveiled sweeping legislative proposals that would raise taxes on big tech companies. MGM fired its CEO amid disagreement over whether the studio was well-positioned for growth. Apple's Iovine will transition into a consulting role and step back from the firm's streaming music business. Citigroup said a loan to Kushner Companies was completely appropriate, and Dropbox raised its IPO valuation and share price target among strong demand. Will FICO's lock on credit scores under fire? The provision would require Fannie and Freddie to weigh other measures of credit worthiness. Congress wants to accelerate a shakeup of one of the firm's dominance over the credit scores used to vet many U.S. mortgages. Lawmakers approved provision as part of the bank deregulation bill that cleared the Senate Wednesday. It would require mortgage finance companies like Fannie and Freddie to consider credit scores beyond FICO score for determining a mortgage application's worthiness. Fannie and Freddie backed nearly half of all U.S. Dollars originating in 17. My apologies for that snafu. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.